Session number 9427.
Mr. Charlesworth, real fall.
Oh, grammar was certainly the worst. It was the most so fierce on both sides. In the first few days, neither side gave any quarter whatsoever. And anyone who was there, it was obvious to them from the number of bodies lying about, you know, and the amount of fire there was. In my personal opinion, it was the fiercest battle the British battalion was involved in during its time in Spain. Although Brunetti was a close second, I mean, that was a pretty bloody affair. There was 30,000 troops on each side there, and there was about 10,000 killed on each side and about 10,000 wounded, and about 10,000 came out all right. So that was a pretty bloody affair as well.
What's happened to you after Brunetti?
Well, the battalion was withdrawn, went back up to Mondecker, and from Mondecker I was sent to a little camp, a canvas camp, by the way, under canvas, not far from Albacete, on a riverbank, not far from, I think it was called Camp Lukacs, but I'm not sure. I think it was called Camp Lukacs. There were several other British lads there, and they were all waiting to come home the same. They'd all been sent there waiting to come home. And I was there a long time. Not some weeks, but a long, long time. And there were some amusing incidents while we were there. Of course, we had nothing to do. We were free to do what we wanted all day long, but there was nothing to do anyway. We were out in the open country, you know, although there was a river to swim in, and the bottles of champagne were ridiculously cheap, and there was melons. The bloke used to bring melons down that you could buy.
Describe the amusing incidents.
Well, I don't know who was in charge of the camp, what nationality he was, but he was one of these Romanian or Hungarian, something like that, you know, something from that area. And he was a very strict fella. And he had a dog. And it was favourite with nearly all the fellows in the camp. And then all at once this dog disappeared. Nobody ever saw it again. And it was about a week later we found out we'd eaten it for a dinner. It had got into the stew pot for the dinner. And then some Frenchmen, they bought a horse and killed it. And I went across and I bought a great big lump of meat off them. Oh, massive piece. And I cut it in two and gave half away to another English bloke, well, Scotchman actually. And I was in the same tent as a lad from Bury. He was killed later on. And we borrowed a stew pot, and we got some onions and some potatoes and the like. We made a stew up, and it lasted the two of us a week, this stew did. That's how much meat there was. But, I mean, when you take a humdrum life like there was there, you know, out in the wilds with nothing at all, and you take incidents like that, they're really something. There's something that stick with you. We used to sit on the riverbank, which wasn't 20 yards away from the tents, and we'd be drinking these bottles of champagne and throwing full ones into the river and diving in to get them out again. This was what all we had to do to pass the time away, you know. Anyway, eventually I was sent off to Albacete and on my way down to Valencia. And then in Valencia, quite a lot of us, mostly civilians, we were put into the back of two big trucks with trailers. They were covered, and they were ammunition lorries, actually. They'd have brought ammunition in from either France or Switzerland, I don't know which. And they were on the way back again. Well, at that particular time, there'd been some floods on the railway, and the railway between Valencia and Barcelona was blocked by these floods. So we were put on these trucks to go by around a route. We went to Castellón and then up into the mountains. And we were about 8 or 9 days in these trucks, wandering all around the Aragon, you know, and stopping at this village and having a meal, and that village and having a meal, and this village for a rest for the night. And eventually we came out at near Tarragona, and we got a train from there to Barcelona. And then, as I say, from Barcelona on my way home.
Did it come as a surprise to you that you should have been sent home?
Well, I knew that some others had been, and I mean, when I was told at the battalion that I was going to Albacete, I wasn't told that I was going home. I was just told that I was going to Albacete, and I went to this Camp Lucas or whatever it is. And there I found out that some of these other fellas were there. See, they'd come down exactly under the same circumstances as me, and some of them told me that they were waiting to go back to England. Now, this lad from Bury, he told me the same, but he never came back. He went back to the battalion and he was killed at Tiverwell.
Were you at Tiverwell?
I was at Tiverwell, but only after the battle. When I went back to rejoin the battalion in January 1938, the Battle of Tiverwell was already taking place. And when I got into Spain and rejoined the battalion, they were in a little village, and I can't remember the name of it. But I know that at that particular time, Bill Alexander was in charge of the battalion at that particular time. And I hadn't been there more than a day or two, and we were put into trucks and went back to Tiverwell. They were expecting a counter-attack. And we went back, and it was a long, long way in the truck to Tiverwell, so I don't know just where the village was. But we went back there, and there was still snow on the ground. It was bitterly cold. But the counter-attack never materialised, and we came back in the trucks to the village. And it wasn't long after that we went up to Belchite, the start of the big retreat.
Can you describe in as much detail as you can recollect what happened then at Belchite?
At the Battle of Calatheite, I've dealt with partly on the other tape. But it ended when it shouldn't have ended, really. The tape ended when it shouldn't have ended, really. And there's another side to the story. Because, as I described on the other tape, when we were ambushed by these tanks, I was level with the tanks. Now, all those in front of me, and most of those who were at the side of me, were either killed or taken prisoner. But I was pretty smart into the dike at the side of the road, and I crawled back, as I said on the other tape. And I didn't stop crawling until I reached two artillery pieces, some long way behind the actual scene of battle. And from there I went to brigade headquarters, and they kept me there for the day. And then they told me to rejoin the battalion, which at that time was being pulled back to fight at to old Gandesa. But when we got to Gandesa, we found that it had already been occupied. The enemy had come round us and had already occupied it. So we had to take positions up outside Gandesa, and we were enfiladed again there and had to move again. And so it went on until we reached the River Ebro. And we crossed that, and when all the troops were across, the bridges were blown up. And that was more or less the end of the big retreat. After the bridges had been blown, the battalion was more or less organised together at Mora Nueva. And then we were sent to positions at a little village. It also had Mora in its name, about a mile and a half upstream, where the railway bridge crossed. That had been blown up as well. And we took up positions along the riverside there. From there, the battalion was reorganised properly, and we had expeditions at night to dig trenches along the hillsides adjoining the river. And then the battalion was pulled out of the line and moved back into some fruit-growing country not far from Falset, about 10 miles behind the line. And while we were there, we were rejoined by new members to the battalion who'd come out from England, and we began training for recrossing the Ebro. But my health was giving out at this time. I'd had trouble with my feet. And now I was getting trouble with a lot of boils breaking out all over.
What was the problem with your feet?
Well, it was during the big retreat. They got very sore and I got blisters on them, and they turned into kind of ulcers. They wouldn't heal up. And they got very, very sore, and it was just general debilitation through bad food, bad hygiene and the like, you know. And as I say, I broke out in boils eventually, and they got that bad that I had to be sent to hospital. And I spent a long, long time, weeks and weeks and weeks, at a special hospital on a special diet. And eventually they did clear up, and I was sent to Barcelona just in time to rejoin the battalion on its way up to Ripoll, where it was being sent waiting withdrawal back to Britain.
How did people react when they heard that everybody was being disbanded to go back to England?
Well, no different to what they had done normally. It was just, you know, they knew it was coming. We'd heard a long, long time previously that the international brigades were going to be withdrawn. I mean, there's a lot of politics entering into it, you see, that I haven't mentioned on the tapes. I mean, we were given to understand, because nearly all the time we were out there, we were short of everything, especially ammunition, especially petrol, because that was the cause of nearly all the failures of the government side in their offensives, just that the petrol ran out. And we'd been given to understand that there'd been an agreement reached that if the Spanish government withdrew the internationals, these countries that belonged to the non-intervention pact would allow them to buy arms. And so that was the understanding that we had at the time. And of course they never were allowed to buy arms when the internationals were withdrawn. Mind you, we were up in Ripoll a long, long time, and they were never allowed to buy arms. And by the time we did move out of Spain, of course, it's too late. I mean, Barcelona was on the point of falling then.
Had morale maintained itself over the whole period that you were there, or did it?
Pretty well. I mean, during the bigger retreat, there was a bit of nervousness about it, because it was a terrible time. You never knew where anybody was. I mean, there was never a lot of fighting, really, during the big retreat. You know, not like there had been at Brunetti, and that we lost a lot of men, I know, at Caspi and at Calathete. But in general, it was a case of taking a position up, and you weren't there many hours, and you had to move out because the enemy had come round you. This actually, in my opinion, that big retreat was German planned, and it was a tryout of the very first Blitzkrieg. That's my opinion.
Speaking about your whole period in Spain, are there any individuals who stand out whom you'd like to mention?
No, it's impossible to single anybody individual out, because, I mean, everybody who was there had some part, sometime during the time, where they were, especially those in the battalion anyway, where they, you know, where they were heroes.
When you got back to Britain, did you suffer any consequences for having been in Spain?
Not really. I mean, I went back home. But it was a hard time then for jobs. I mean, I can't say that it was because I'd been in Spain that I didn't get a job, because there weren't any jobs about. But eventually I saw this advert in the paper for a job down at Grantham. I applied for it and I got it. Moved to Grantham and that was it.
Did you get any kind of reception on returning back
from
Spain?
Yeah, the battalion as a whole, when we got to Dover, I don't know whether this is down on anyone else's record or not, but anyway, we'll start from Ripoll. When the order came for us to move, a special train was put on for us to take us from Ripoll to the border. And of course, Ripoll's up in the Pyrenees, and the road, the railway actually runs in the bottom of a ravine with the road halfway up the side. And we could see all the way to the border, we could see these three lorries with anti-aircraft guns on the back accompanying us all the way to the border. When we got to the border, we were taken to the railway station is actually divided into two. One part's Spanish, the other part's French. So we got off the train and then we went to this barrier. And on the other side of the barrier, there were British soldiers. British soldiers from the British Army. And they had lists, and they counted us and numbered us through, put us onto this train, into two coaches anyway, and locked all the doors. And we were in that train with the doors locked until they unlocked the doors to let us off to get on the boat to come onto the Channel ferry. And I think the general in charge, there was a general in charge of that evacuation, and I think his name was either Holdsworth or Molesworth. I can't remember which now. Anyway, we came across on the ferry, and at Dover the immigration were waiting, and they picked two or three out and took them away alike, because we had bad ones amongst us as well as good.
Bad and, ones in what way?
Well, I know one fella in particular I used to talk to a lot. His name was Kemp, and he used to tell me he was a diamond smuggler, and he showed me how he used to smuggle them. He had a cavity in his chest, a deep cavity, and he put them in that and covered it with skin-like material. And he reckoned he'd made his living at that like that for years.
So he was picked up by the customs?
He was picked up, yeah. And there was two or three others as well for him, various demeanours at once, a kind of another, I suppose. And then we got on the train to Victoria, and at Victoria the official reception was there. I can't remember properly, but in my opinion, a lot of high officials, Labour Party officials and the like, were there. Attlee was there at Victoria. I'm nearly sure they were there at Victoria. And I think we got into coaches there and went down to Whitehall. Not Whitehall, Whitechapel. And I think it was at Whitechapel we marched down the road. I'm nearly sure it wasn't Victoria, I'm nearly sure it was Whitechapel. We marched down the road and we went to this big hall, and we had a good meal there, and then we were sorted out and sent off to stay the night with different people who volunteered to take us for the, you know, for their stay in London like. And the following day, I was with another bloke, myself, we were with some people on Hampstead Heath. And I never did know the names. And then the following day, we were brought back and we were kitted out with civilian clothes and the like, because we'd all turned up in our army stuff. And I think I stayed two nights with these people. But anyway, on the last day, I was given my bus fare to Manchester, and I caught a bus back up to Manchester, and then of course back home to Dell.
But when you were in Whitechapel, was there a formal welcome and speeches?
Yes,
and crowds?
Yes, yeah.
How many people turned out?
It's difficult to say really, because as I say, I'm nearly sure it's Whitechapel where we marched along the road. Others, it's hard to say, but thousands.
Are you glad you went to Spain?
I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry. And I mean, I'm too old to do it again now, I'll admit. But if a similar occasion arose, I'd do anything I could to help.
I think that after you got back, you did some tour around speaking to audiences about Spain.
Yeah, that was during the 6 weeks when I was home, in between the two periods I had in Spain. Yes, I was asked to speak at several WEA meetings.
It was the WEA that asked you, was it?
Yeah, WEA, and also besides that, I was asked by Spanish relief committees to speak at meetings. I spoke in Manchester and I spoke at a big meeting in Oldham, King Street Stores it was, King Street Co-op Hall. It's gone now, it's been pulled down under a redevelopment line. But Stafford Critz was the principal speaker. On that particular occasion, it was a Sunday night, and they collected £220, which is, it's a remarkable figure, really.
Were these meetings in the form of rallies, or were they
No, they were just a meeting. They were billed as a meeting. It told who would be speaking, and the various officials. And the one at the King Street Co-op, which is a big hall, there was all seats, forms they were, wooden forms, and I was up on the stage with several other people, including Stafford Cripps, of course, and he was the man who pulled the money in.
So this was in late 1937, was it?
Yeah, it was around December 1937, that was. Because I went back to Spain early in January.
What was the nature of what you said in these meetings?
Well, at the meeting itself, the Spanish aid meetings, of course, was to collect money for food. So I dealt mainly with the food problem in Spain, more than anything.